Chers auditeurs, je vous souhaite la bienvenue à votre rendez-vous musical Appassionato sur Radio Judaïca 90.2 FM que vous pouvez également suivre en streaming sur notre site radiojudaica.be. Nous avons l'immense plaisir et privilège d'accueillir aujourd'hui Micha Maeski et Leonid Kerbel pour rendre hommage à Ivry Gitlis. Hello Micha.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, Leonid.
Hello, good morning.
Micha Maeski, vous êtes l'un des violonistes majeurs de tous les temps. Vous vous produisez sur toutes les principales salles de la planète et collaborez avec les plus grands musiciens, de Leonard Bernstein à Martha Argerich, en passant par Zubin Mehta ou Guidon Kremer. Leonid Kerbel, vous formez avec votre épouse, Hagit, le couple de professeurs le plus dynamique. Vous avez fondé Musica Mundi, une école de musique sans équivalent dans notre royaume. Vous avez tous les deux accepté notre invitation pour évoquer la mémoire d'Ivry Gitlis. Pour ceux qui ne sont pas familiers avec Ivry Gitlis, voici un petit rappel. Ivry est probablement l'un des plus incroyables, des plus libres et des plus vibrants violonistes du XXe siècle. Né en 1921 dans le protectorat anglais de Palestine, le jeune Gitlis part étudier à 11 ans à Paris grâce à une collecte organisée par le grand virtuose Bronislav Huberman, celui-là même qui créera l'Orchestre philharmonique d'Israël. Ivry Gitlis débarque donc en Europe en 1933 et étudie entre autres avec Georges Enescu et Jacques Thibault à Paris, et avec Karl Flech notamment à Spa en Belgique. Réfugié en Angleterre pendant la guerre, il donne des dizaines de concerts pour les forces alliées. Dans les années 1960, Ivry est aussi le premier artiste israélien à se produire en URSS. En 1968, il participe également au Rolling Stone Rock'n'Roll Circus, dans lequel il se produit avec Yoko Ono. Ivry est un artiste libre, il refuse les classifications et les frontières et joue aussi bien avec Martha Argerich, Michel Legrand, Stéphane Grappelli ou Barbara. Ivry Gitlis est aussi un artiste complet, également à l'aise comme acteur dans les films de Truffaut, Schlöndorff ou de Daniel Thompson. Il touche à tout et refuse les classifications. C'est au terme d'une belle, longue et riche vie qu'il nous a quittés le 24 décembre 2020. Je vous propose de débuter notre entretien avec l'humoresque d'Antonin Dvorak. Ivry Gitlis est accompagné de Shigeru Neriki. Thank you. l'humoresque d'Antonin Dvorak par Ivry Gitlis et Shigeru Neriki. Nos invités, Leonid Kerbel et Micha Maeski, sont en studio pour évoquer Ivry Gitlis qui nous a quittés ce 24 décembre 2020. Pour le confort de nos invités, cette interview aura lieu en anglais. Micha, tell us, how did you first meet Ivry Gitlis?
Oh, it was almost 46 years ago. It was in the summer of 1975. And I remember it like yesterday, for many different reasons. It was in south of France, in Vannes Festival, which he was created at the time. And I was with some friends around this area and saw the advertisement and went there for one evening to just meet my old friend Alexander Rabinovich, who just arrived from Russia, and Frédéric Lodéon, who was there as well.
The French cellist.
Yes, fantastic French cellist. Instead, I stayed for several days. I was in the audience of one of the evening concerts. He was talking from stage, and suddenly he announced, I heard there's some young Russian cellist who arrived recently here. Frédéric told me, why don't you come here? Join us. So I was a bit surprised. I went on stage and he started talking to me and asking all kinds of questions. And then, why don't you play for us something? I said, oh, come on. I don't even have my cello. Doesn't matter. Frédéric, give him your cello. So Frédéric gave me his cello and I sat down and with his wife at the time, Daria Hovara, with whom later I played and recorded many things. We, without obviously any rehearsal, played two movements of Shostakovich Sonata. And by chance, one of the people in the audience sitting on the ground was Marta Argerich with her youngest daughter, Stephanie, who was 4 months old at the time. And that's how I met Marta Argerich. So, of course, for many different reasons, it was unforgettable and very important moment in my life. But if it would be just meeting Marta, that would be more than enough already.
And how would you describe the spirit at this festival in Vannes?
Oh, it was quite incredible, actually, like everything what he did in so many ways. It was totally unique because, you know, I could say that I always am the luckiest cellist in the world for different reasons. And it's true. I had great privilege to meet and encounter quite a few incredible musicians about whom one could say one and only, you know, starting with my teacher, Strapovich, and my second teacher, Pitigorsky, and Pablo Casals, whom I was lucky to meet in Jerusalem, and of course, Leonard Bernstein, and many, many others. But probably Ivry is the person about whom this expression, one and only, applies to him more than to anyone else, because he was really totally unique in so many different ways. I mean, so unbelievably gifted, not just as a violinist musician, but so, yeah, it was every encounter with him ever since until the very end was really quite unforgettable and very, very special.
And you were in the East Bloc. Did you knew already about Ivry Gitlis? Was he already famous in that part of the world?
Oh, yes, I mean, definitely. I heard the name, of course, and the same, like, of course, another great violinist of his generation, Ida Handel.
Yes.
And unlike Ivry, Ida got offended when I once, the only time we played together with Marta Argerich, Beethoven Triple Concerto, I told to her, you know, Ida, when I was growing up in Soviet Union, you were already then legendary. And she got offended because it's kind of implied that she was not so young anymore, which is, I mean, when you, after you're 80, 85, you should be proud of your age and not ashamed of it. But okay, she was a coquette woman. But Ivry, I think, didn't have this problem and with being legendary, and he definitely was.
I suggest we continue. Je vous propose de poursuivre notre émission avec le rondo du concerto en ré numéro 1 opus 6 de Paganini. L'Orchestre Philharmonique National de Varsovie est placé sous la direction de Stanislav Wislowski. Thank you.
Thank you.
rondo du concerto en ré numéro 1 opus 6 de Paganini. L'Orchestre Philharmonique National de Varsovie était placé sous la direction de Stanislav Wisłowski. Un enregistrement choisi pour cette émission en hommage à Ivry Kitlis. Leonid, tell us, how did you first encounter Ivry?
I first encountered Ivry when I was 12 years old in Israel. It was in Tel Aviv. In fact, it was a very funny story because I had I played a concert in his family's apartment in Tel Aviv, and he supposed to arrive and to listen to me, but from different reasons he didn't come, and then the family invited me to his concert in the Halle Tarbut,
yes,
in Tel Aviv. And I met him for the first time in the Halle Tarbut when he was playing a Paganini concerto. And it was the first encounter, personal encounter like this. And then, of course, the next one, it was in Musica Mundi.
And were you fascinated by his way with the violin, with the way he played already by that time?
Fascinated, I think it's a lightweight word. I mean, it was like a magic. The way Ivry plays, it's, you know, every single sound, it's like penetrates your heart and penetrates your soul. Every single sound, it's amazing what he does with his bow. His unique approach to articulation, his unique approach to interpretation, which he goes out of all the boundaries and the conceptions.
His heart was very special. It was very unique. Do you think it's something that can be taught? Because
No, you can't teach this. And obviously, I mean, I hear many young violinists that try to imitate Ivry Kitlis, and there is no way.
There's no way. It's impossible.
It's impossible because the sense of timing of every single sound, the sense of meaning of every single sound, of harmony, of articulation, of everything combined, it's unique to every artist. You cannot teach a cellist to play like Misha Maisky. You cannot teach a violinist to play like Ivry Kitlis.
Je vous propose donc à présent d'écouter l'Allegro ma non troppo du concerto en ré mineur de Jean Sibelius. Ivry Kitlis est accompagné de l'Orchestre symphonique de Vienne, placé sous la direction de Yasha Horenstein. Thank you. Vous êtes sur Radio Judaïka et vous écoutez Appassionato, votre rendez-vous musical. C'était l'Allegro Manantropo du concerto en ré mineur de Jean Sibelius. Ivry Gitlis était accompagné de l'Orchestre Symphonique de Vienne, placé sous la direction de Yasha Horenstein. Nous enchaînons directement avec le troisième mouvement, Lebhaft, du concerto pour violon de Paul Hindemith. Ivry Gitlis est accompagné de l'Orchestre Symphonique de Westphalie, dirigé par Hubert Reichert. troisième mouvement, Lebhaft, du concerto pour violon de Paul Hindemith. Ivry Gitlis était accompagné de l'orchestre symphonique de Westphalie, dirigé par Hubert Reichert. Nous poursuivons cette émission en hommage à Ivry Gitlis, en compagnie de Misha Maïski et Leonid Kerbel. Leonid, how did you have this brilliant idea to invite Ivry Gitlis for masterclass on the Musica Mundi summer session?
Well, it was kind of a natural idea because after I met Ivry Gitlis in Tel Aviv, in Echala Tarbut, when I was 12. This encounter I remembered for all my life. And I wanted always to invite Ivry to Musica Mundi. And one day he was free and he came. And when he came afterwards, he said, I want to stay, literally. So he came every year.
And you also did a special concert at Palais des Beaux-Arts, reuniting Misha and all his friends. How was the reaction to the guest when you initiated this this event?
I mean, this concert, in fact, I proposed to Ivry, asked if it's okay for him that I will organize this. But by his nature, Ivry hated birthdays. He
had a lot.
A lot of birthdays. And he was not so keen, but then I told him the idea, listen, I mean, it will be easy going, it will be more Ivry Gitlis style, it's not like official, too official thing, and this is why we organized this this concert in the style of, you know, interview, conversation, performance, really easy going thing. And then I started to contact all the friends of Ivry, Misha Maïski, Maxim Vengerov, Jenin Janssens, Marta Argerich.
They all said yes immediately.
They all said yes. They all said yes. The problem was to find the date. And we found the date. And and Ivry was very, very happy with that everyone will come. And it was really a very, very exciting evening. I can tell you that we didn't know the program of that evening until the evening before the concert. if you remember, I mean, we knew some you know key points of chamber music, but what people gonna play? You know, we all met at the apartment of Marta Argerich in Brussels evening before. And the program was finalized there at 11 o'clock at night.
Misha, tell us, Ivry had the reputation to be quite demanding. Some artists say that it was a bit difficult to play with him. How would you...
Actually, I never felt this way from the very beginning. It was rather natural and comfortable. And because from the very beginning we got very good contact on a human level. And it helps a lot making music as well. And I remember when we were still in Vance, the year after the first encounter, when he invited both Marta Argerich and me to come officially to perform there, we were sight reading backstage Mendelssohn Trio, not backstage, I mean his home, with Marta and with him. And then played in Paris Schumann Quintet, I remember very well, with one rehearsal. Without viola player who came to the concert directly, and it was a very special experience, like every other. And actually, I mentioned Ida Händel and us playing together with Marta Beethoven Triple. It was her first time Ida's playing Beethoven Triple Concerto. And by incredible coincidence, I had an honor to play with Ivry Beethoven Triple in Jerusalem, and he played it as well for the first time. It was Marta who asked me to come to Israel Festival for this concert. And finally, she canceled it. And I got stuck with Ivry. And Paul Badura Škoda arrived from Vienna to replace Marta. And it was as well quite an unforgettable experience for many different reasons, which I probably shouldn't even get into details. Anyway, but then last time, I'm not sure if it was last time we ever played together, but maybe... It was a month before his 90th birthday in Verbier Festival. They organized this afternoon 1 hour with Ivry Gitlis and friends. And he told me, Martha was going over and said, hey, can you do something with me? I don't have any friends left here. So, of course, I was honored and happy to do it. And Yuja Wang even postponed her flight to Los Angeles for a day in order to participate, which was very nice. So we played with her, for him, something. And then we played together One Moment of Mendelssohn Trio with Evie. And just before, the only time we kind of for sure strung through, at some point he starts saying, I'm mad! It's like something is wrong. And me being Russian Jew, you know, when something goes wrong, I always think it's me. So I start apologizing, said, did I do something wrong? No, I played the false note, he said. I said, you know, Ivry, it's just the perfect time for you to quote Rubinstein, because I was in Israel in Jerusalem when Rubinstein was 89 years old and played with orchestra. And I was at the rehearsal when orchestra was still tuning. He tried the piano and played some passage, and it was not quite perfect. So he said, yes, I'm not 80 anymore. 80 was nothing, but 89 is not the same. So I told him, you know, you're not 80 anymore, so what's big deal? So one false note. And then after we finally, after the concert, he told me, thanks for doing this with me. I said, oh, come on, Ivy, you don't have to thank me. It's a pleasure and an honor for me. And you know what? Let's make a deal. Let's do it in 10 years again for your 100. And then I told him, now you should have quoted George Burns, who at the age of 96 or something like this, signed contract with one of the big hotels in Las Vegas to do a bunch of shows after he was turning 100 years old. And in an interview, they asked him, are you really going to do this, all these shows when you turn 100? He said, hey, if they will be still around, I'll do it. So I told him, you should have done it. If you will be still around, yes, let's do it, yes. Because I was sure that he will be around. And somehow, to be honest, I sincerely feel that if only he would follow the advice of Leonid and Hagit and move to Musica Mundi, as they invited him during the last years, he would be still around to celebrate next year his 100th birthday. But anyway, 98 is really not
it's
bad.
Already yes. Yeah, a nice, it's nice birthday. Leonid, you, of course, were privileged to attend many masterclass with Ivry Gitlis. According to you, what was the main message he tried to instill to your students?
Yeah.
It's a difficult question, yeah, I realize.
I think the message that Ivry was telling us, it's not only to the students of Musica Mundi. I think it's to all of us. It's be yourself, be unique. You are unique and you should stay the way you are. This was his motto all the time. He lived by this idea, he lived by this feeling, and he transmitted this. He was trying to make students to forget about the boundaries that they've been taught. You know, all the artificial borders and the conceptions and agreements. And he was telling them just play the same melody in different styles. Play Frère Jacques in Baroque style, in Romantic style, in jazz style, in whatever, the music can change its meaning according to what you put in it. It's in fact also the same message as Leonard Bernstein gave in his concerts for young. With the New York Philharmonic, if you know it, he said the music.
This is a fantastic series.
Absolutely, and he said, you know, music, it's about nothing. Literally, it's about nothing in the sense that you can actually put into the same melody, into the same piece, totally different meaning. And Ivry was saying exactly this, you know. And so it was a universal message. It was not really to specific students.
Misha, Ivry used to say that one shouldn't be too respectful to the great masterpiece that...
No, it depends what one means by this. To be perfectly honest, I actually feel that one cannot be respectful enough when one plays really great music. But it's of course just question depends how you interpret this, because the idea is that one has to have a lot of respect to the text of composer, but even more important, to have respect to the spirit of music. And spirit of music, as Leonid just said, we all know that music, for me in any case, music is very living organism, living thing. It changes all the time. It's never the same. It's dormant on paper, but the moment we interpreters bring it, wake up and bring it back to life, so to say, it's... it becomes totally unique and it's never the same. It depends on your own condition on the day. It depends on your partners, of course. It depends on the acoustics of the hall and the weather and the audience and so on and so on. And that's what makes it so exciting, because that's why so many musicians play the same music again and again and record it again. And as far as I'm concerned, it's never boring, although sometimes maybe it is. But
it's not.
But the music is never boring. And some people make it boring. But so, yeah, but respect still should be there, because one should realize that as important as it is, the role of interpreters, it is extremely important. Still, we should never forget what is what and who is who, and that music should always remain the first and most important thing. And your personality is just helps. We're messengers between the great composers and the audience, and helping the people to discover, to appreciate, to enjoy great music, and it's very important, but still we should always put horse in front of the carriage and not other way around.
Leonid, during the master classes, was Ivry really concerned with the technical aspect or problem that the student were facing, or it was more a question of philosophy and a general approach to the music?
Ivry was always a spiritual man. It's that he approached the technique through the music. He did not speak about the technique as an issue by itself. Many times he solved technical problems of the student by talking about the spirit of the music and its meaning. And when the student started to imagine things and to do things with feelings and to be more free, suddenly the technique started to work. So he was not obsessed like, to move, to make the right movements, to make the right... not in this sense, no. He approached everything through spirituality.
Alors, nous poursuivons cet hommage à Ivry Gitlis avec morceau de concert pour violon et orchestre de Camille Saint-Saëns. Ivry est accompagné de l'Orchestre national de l'Opéra de Monte-Carlo, placé sous la direction d'Edouard Van Remortel. morceau de concert pour violon et orchestre de Camille Saint-Saëns. Ivry Gitlis était accompagné de l'Orchestre National de l'Opéra de Monte Carlo, placé sous la direction d'Edouard Van Remortel. Misha, Ivry claimed to belong to a certain tradition of music making. How would you describe this lineage?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know. It's very difficult for me personally because, you know, English is not my first language. I always use it as an excuse. But then I always say that even my first language, which happened to be Russian, is not my best language.
It's music, your best language.
Yes, I hope so, that music is my best language. When one asks such questions about music, I personally always prefer to answer it with through music itself instead of talking about it. It's a different profession. There are people who speak and write about music incredibly eloquently and maybe cannot play at all or whatever. So, yeah, but in any case, he definitely, as we keep repeating, but it's obvious for anyone who ever met him or heard him, he was totally unique. I don't think one could even put him in any kind of
school or.
Yes, absolutely, mm-hmm. Yes. And there was nobody like him before or never will be after. And just because of his combination of his unique qualities that he managed to make such an important mark and make such an important career, despite not really fitting into this mold of
tradition, schools,
classical music,
yes.
Establishment. He was definitely anti-establishment personality, and we all should just be very happy to have met him, to have chance to enjoy his unique music making and unique personality.
Leonid Ivry claimed that his main influence was Enescu, and that he was also influenced by Huberman. How would you describe this type of violinist?
Well, it is. I think it's very, very complex the question in a sense. I think Enescu was a great musician. Also a very good composer as a violinist, was great violinist. His way of writing music and playing music was kind of a combination of classical and folk, with a little bit touch of gypsy. And when we speak about Huberman, this is really like establishment of classical violin playing. But both musicians, I think, had a phenomenal sense of beauty of tone. Beautiful melodical line. It doesn't matter which style they played, if it's Baroque, folk. I mean, Huberman didn't play so much folk, but still the Romantic, and even in Mozart, Huberman made phenomenal phrasing and vibrato, and the use of vibrato, and the way he made voicing in Bach, and Enescu with his developed ear to special harmonies. You know, in Romania you have a lot of different influences of cultures, you know. So I think somewhere it was there with Ivry all his life, because he was longing all the time to go and to meet simple people, you know, somewhere in the mountains in Peru, for example, you know, or just to play in the fields, to play in open air, to go to Japan and to play on the seashore, whatever. It was there, so I think yes, it was there all the time.
So you both had the chance to meet him a lot of time. Is there any anecdote you would like to share with us? Anything, a good memory?
Basically, every time you met him, and it was an event. It was never just... It was always something unique happening. And I remember when we played also in Jerusalem Festival, in Israel Festival, Schumann Quintet with Itamar Golan, who was, I don't remember, 14, 15, 16 years old, I'm not sure quite, very young, and who refused to play Last Moment for some reason. We played without Last Moment. But the unforgettable detail of this performance was that Isaac Stern was standing in a door. He was not even sitting. He just... we all could see him playing. And it was, of course, made it also quite... special for many different reasons. But again, as I said, every time we had chance to play something, and unfortunately it wasn't really enough, because we were talking about playing trio with Marta from the very beginning when we met, and it really never somehow materialized. I don't know why, for different reasons. He played and recorded with Marta quite a lot, and so did I afterwards. And we did play some chamber music together, but there was talk, and even on some of my biographies, people by mistake put that my debut in France, in Paris, was a trio with Marta Argerich and Yves Gittles. But actually, it never happened in the concert stage. We played trios just at home, as I mentioned before. And yeah, I wish we'd have more occasions making music together, but still, I cannot complain. Whenever I had this chance, it was great privilege and pleasure and honor and whatever.
And you, Leonid?
I think with Ivy, there are so many anecdotes to tell Frankie that I don't really know what to choose, because every time you meet him, every time there's something. It's like it's never... It's never, you know, just a normal meeting, as Misha said, you know. But I will come back to the 90th birthday that we organized in Palais des Beaux-Arts, and Misha played with Ivry the Schumann piano quintet, the slow movement, and Ivry played the wrong note. And, and he didn't like the way he played. And then, as you remember, it was a very long concert. It was a concert of almost 3.5 hours. And after they finished the slow movement, Ivry turns to the audience and says, maybe we should play it again, because it was not so good.
And you did.
And then he turns to me and looks at me, if it's okay. And I was, looking at the watch already, it was, yeah. And then we said, okay, I mean, it's a concert.
It's his party.
It's
yes.
His party.
Yes.
So he played it twice in that concert.
That's very nice to hear. So I would suggest we continue with music. Je vous propose de finir en fait cette émission avec l'une des pièces qu'Ivry interprétait le plus souvent. Il s'agit du Liebeslied de Fritz Kreisler. Shigeru Neriki est au piano. Thank you. Yitlis interprétait pour nous Liebesleid de Fritz Kreisler, Shigeru Neriki était au piano. Votre émission de musique classique Appassionato touche ainsi à sa fin. Merci beaucoup, Misha. Merci beaucoup, Léonie, d'avoir accepté notre invitation. Merci à Carlos Amadjoa d'avoir assuré la technique de cette émission. N'oubliez pas qu'Appassionato est diffusé sur les ondes et le site de Radio Judaïca les lundis à 13h, les mercredis à 14h et les dimanches à 9h. Merci, chers auditeurs, de nous avoir écoutés. À la semaine prochaine. D'ici là, portez-vous bien.